We take a look at some of the week's top news from around Wisconsin. Governor Evers is proposing that the state help revamp a Madison event center. The protected status of gray wolves may soon be changing again, and the results are in from last night's U.S. Cheese Championship. Robert Metzer is a statewide living and storytelling editor for USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, thank you for having me back.
Well, let's take a look at Governor Evers' budget. Not the budget we've already heard about, but the capital budget, the building stuff budget. One thing he's asked for is a $30 million boost to help redevelop the Alliant Energy Center in Madison. It's a big event facility. Here's the governor talking about that a little bit.
We're making this investment because many of the venue users have outgrown the facility, and many of the prospective users are opting out for other venues with that have adequate space and amenities located outside of the state of Wisconsin. We have to stop that.
So, Rob, talk a little more about state support for this project.
Right. So the $30 million that Governor Evers proposed for this Alliant Energy Center project, I think a thing to know is that that's actually quite a small share of what is a very large and sweeping redevelopment plan from proposed by Dane County. So the Alliant Energy Center is owned by Dane County, and it's an important place in Madison for sure, and an economic driver for that city. But it also is a place that people from all over the state have some relation to. You know, they do big events at the Veterans Memorial Coliseum there, and the facility is a gathering space for state events or shows and exhibitions. It's a whole campus with green space and everything. And so the larger redevelopment project proposed by this Dane County Oversight Committee, all in all, costs $305 million in the first phase in some public and some private, a lot of private funding as well. So this state share would go toward expanding the exhibition hall, really with the idea of making more of a convention center space to try to attract, as the governor said in that clip, attract more conventions and trade organizations and such.
Now, this capital budget is kind of budget part two. It's not usually the one that gets as much attention as the one the governor delivered in his address not too long ago. Is it, though, Rob, news? Is this something that we should be picking apart here?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same. The same basic principle applies, right? The governor has put forward his priorities and projects that he would like to see built across the state. This is one very big and notable project. Overall, the capital budget is really big. It's like $2.5 billion. And Republican leaders, right away, as soon as it was released, balked at that amount. And, you know, it's too much new spending. So we can, like, assume this will be one more thing that they will fight about and bargain about through the process. But it is still significant, that this is what the governor's putting forward. This is where he sees a priority for him. I have no special insight into whether the Alliant Energy Center project specifically is going to end up being a bargaining chip or whether it will actually go through. I don't know how the next few months will go, but it is one of the highest profile parts of this capital budget. And so that's significant.
Moving on to an issue that's been a long running controversy here in Wisconsin and at the federal level, Rob, this week, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said it would propose a rule to delist the gray wolf from the endangered species list. So taking the gray wolf off the list. This has been a long back and forth. What was their reasoning for this proposal?
Well, so scientifically, gray wolves are hard to count, but all the scientific estimates say that the size of the herd has rebounded significantly. And just in Wisconsin, there are about 900 wolves now, according to scientists. In the year 2000, there were 204. That went to something like 700 in 2010. So, I mean, that is a pretty dramatic increase over time in the wolf population. Those are just Wisconsin numbers. This is a federal proposal, but the same basic pattern holds. And so this has led the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, at least in their announcement, that they will seek this policy, that they will seek to delist the gray wolf, to sort of like declare victory. They want to say this shows the success of our conservation efforts. And in the same way that bald eagles today, the population is actually quite healthy, which was not always the case. They say, you know, now we're at a point where the gray wolf population is in a good place.
There's been a lot of back and forth on this, efforts to delist, challenges in courts. We're not going to untangle all of that now. Republican Representative Sean Duffy has made this delisting a big issue. What are some of the big arguments, the top arguments on either side here, Rob?
Well, so an important argument for delisting in favor of taking them off the endangered species list is that people in the Northwoods of Wisconsin say that they experience, like, that they brush up against wolves in ways that can be dangerous. They say that wolves, you know, endanger or kill their livestock. You live up in the North Woods and your dog is running around, and they are afraid that they're at risk there. On the anti side, I mean, I think a lot of the opposition comes from the fact, it is not a hypothetical situation, it is a fact that delisting the gray wolf will trigger, make it allowed to hunt. There will be a wolf hunt in Wisconsin. There has been as recently as a few years ago, when there was a period of time when the wolf was off the endangered species list. And I think that a lot of people, that seems wrong. And I think that's one of the primary arguments against delisting.
Talking to Rob Metzer, statewide living and storytelling editor at USA Today Network Wisconsin, looking at some of the week's news from around the state. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking to Rob Metzer of USA Today Network Wisconsin, looking at some of this week's top news stories from around the state. Rob, salt and then some cheese. Cities have had to use a lot of salt on the roads this winter, or mainly this half of the winter. And we hear this story in Cudahy, taking steps to store more of it by building a new facility. What's going on there?
Well, so yeah, this is like a south suburb of Milwaukee, and they're having a big fight about this at the city council. Some people do not want the new salt dome, or they said it was too expensive, and this is in the way of local politics. This has become a flashpoint. I don't know. I couldn't say whether Cudahy needs a new salt dome or not, but it does raise, as you say, the very big, significant issue across Wisconsin for municipalities about sort of how do you manage the many tons of salt that are required to get through a Wisconsin winter, and how do you predict when you're going to have a winter like this one where it snows every other day. This is like a real issue for municipalities to manage.
Right. You underbuy, then obviously you run out of salt partway through. You overbuy, you waste it, and it's hard to store unless you have something like a salt dome. It is a tough high wire act for local governments.
Yeah, so another story from this week, Appleton just found out that it will not be able to resupply salt until sometime in the spring. So the city there had to announce that they're only going to salt main roadways, bridges, some hills. According to reporting from the Appleton Post-Crescent, the city ordered more than 4,000 tons of salt for this winter, and they were only delivered 2,500 tons. So it's sort of they got a little bit of a raw deal there. But cities are looking at alternatives, right? So you and I can use sand maybe on our driveways or whatever, sidewalks, but cities can't really do that in large quantities because it clogs up storm sewers. And it's a tightrope to walk, and there are a lot of there are alternatives that exist. Oftentimes they're more expensive than just plain old rock salt.
Right. There are also, in addition to the cost and storage issues, there are environmental concerns of using too much salt. What kind of alternatives are some governments using?
Yeah, for sure. Salt is corrosive. It can do damage to roads and cars. It dumps chlorides into the water. So every once in a while you'll see reporting on the attempts. You know, in Minnesota they use byproducts of beets, sort of beet juice on roads. In Wisconsin, yes, it is true. Some places have experimented with using cheese brine.
Right.
This is the most Wisconsin solution and therefore the best. But it comes down to cost, right? So in general, places that are using these sorts of alternatives are doing them to supplement rock salt rather than take the place of it, because rock salt is what they move in giant tons and store under giant domes, and that's like what everyone's sort of set up to do.
And speaking of setups, Rob, you gave me a great segue there. You mentioned cheese, and instead of putting cheese products on the road, the biennial United States Cheese Championship was bringing some of the best cheeses from around the country to Green Bay. 10 of the 20 finalists were from Wisconsin. What was the competition like here, Rob?
It looked like a good time to me. My colleagues were out there at Lambeau Field following the several days of the competition there. So, you know, first of all, you know, congratulations or whatever to the national winner, which was Gugisberg cheese, which unfortunately is an Ohio cheese, but I am a charitable, I'm a generous person. I don't hold that against them. I give them their congratulations, but it was a baby Swiss. It was declared the best cheese in the nation. But Wisconsin had a good showing. Wisconsin had first place in 58 out of 116 categories.
Wow.
Which, if my math is correct, I believe that's half.
I did the same calculation.
Yeah, mm-hmm, I think it checks out. And swept the top three places in 23 of those categories, first, second, third. That's a good accomplishment. And former national champion and a pretty well-known cheesemaker in Wisconsin, Marika, the cheese is Marika Gouda from Thorpe, won the second and third place awards, and she makes some. Her Gouda is her specialty. She has her own herd of cows that produce the milk she uses. There's a lot of attention to detail, and so she's. I heard that those are ones to check out.
Rob, in the interest of cutting edge investigative journalism, what do you think? You and I, we double check the results here by tasting all cheeses involved. I think the public demands it.
I think it should be done. So just to get this in here, a thing to know about this particular competition is very technical. It's all based on, you know, the judges are like food scientists. So it's all based on like objective measures, texture and stuff. And so that's how they're measuring what is technically the best. But there are critics out there among cheese lovers who say that it's entirely too technical and that in fact it tends toward, it sort of eliminates like an aesthetically risky or interesting or flavorful winner. So again, this is something we need to like investigate. We got to check this out.
All right. We'll start this weekend. Rob, thanks a lot for joining us as always.
All right. Thank you.
That's Rob Mentzer, statewide living and storytelling editor for USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. He joins us each week at this time for our Wisconsin News Roundup. Some communities around Wisconsin are struggling to come up with affordable housing, and in the state's second biggest city, the issue is starting to affect a new group of people, refugees. Last month, one of two resettlement agencies that worked in Madison said it could no longer place refugees in the city. The reason? Not enough affordable housing. Will Cushman is the associate editor of wiscontext.org. Will, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Well, this announcement from a resettlement agency, tell us a little bit about who's making this announcement, what changes now?
Right. The Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan, which is based in Milwaukee but has had a satellite office in Madison for some time, announced effective January 15th that they would no longer be resettling refugees in Madison. They've been doing it for several years. But they decided to focus their efforts on Milwaukee due to the basically lack of affordable housing in Madison.
And let's dig into that part
sure.
of the story. It's a big issue in Dane County, not just affecting refugees. What do we know about how affordability has changed in Wisconsin's second biggest city over the years?
It's outpaced the rest of the state, as well as Wisconsin's largest city, Milwaukee. Rents in Madison, I've used HUD fair market rents to look at this because there aren't a whole lot of other data points that are kind of provide a snapshot yearly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Madison's rent has gone up anywhere from around 25% for an efficiency. This is over the last 5 years, to over 33% for a four bedroom. And the one and two bedrooms, three bedrooms, it's all around 20-25% increase over the last 5 years.
And what's driving that increase in costs, as far as we can tell?
Part of it, I think, is just the fact that Madison is growing faster than housing units are being built.
Simple supply and demand in some ways there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And a lot of that is potentially related to recent changes in just the Madison economy. By recent, I mean in the last like 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. The tech sector has really boomed in Madison over the last couple decades. And those are, in addition to bringing in a lot of jobs, they're bringing in quite a few well-paying jobs. And quite a number of young professionals who maybe would prefer an apartment rather than settling in Madison via purchasing a house.
So it's a good news, bad news story like we see in a lot of West Coast cities. Yay, high-paying jobs, economy looking good in a community. Bad news, it's making housing unaffordable for a lot of the people who live and work there.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's definitely not as acute as places like San Francisco and Seattle, which are dealing with really intense, acute shortages of affordable housing, but it is certainly an issue in Madison.
All right, now let's bring the refugees back into the story. Now,
sure.
We've got these high housing costs. When you talk to people with refugee resettlement groups, what are they seeing as they try to place individual refugees or families in a community like Madison?
Right, so the first thing that is difficult for them to deal with is just finding an apartment that is available. Resettlement agencies usually only have 10 days to 2 weeks to notice to find an apartment.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's often like once they get that notice, they're racing trying to find an apartment. And in Madison, with so many apartments kind of following that May to May or August to August lease cycle that is associated with the large student population, it can be difficult to find available apartments just to begin with. And then on top of that, finding an affordable apartment is really difficult because the refugees that are resettling are coming in without jobs and are going to pretty quickly need to be able to pay for these apartments on their own. So they need to be really affordable. And they also need to be in an accessible place. Most of the refugees are coming in without driver's licenses as well. So they need to be on a bus line.
That 10-day to two-week notice, because the refugee resettlement agencies don't know a year in advance that a particular refugee is coming to town.
Right, yeah, or even a few months. And I can say anecdotally for myself personally and hearing a lot of stories from people I know in Madison that even finding an available, affordable apartment with months' notice is tricky and pretty stressful.
Somewhat famously, I think if you get a Madison apartment and move in August, your landlord is asking for a renewal maybe in October or December, that soon.
Yeah, that happened to me a couple years ago. It's pretty crazy.
So what the refugees that would have come to Madison now, they're going to end up in Milwaukee. What's the scene there when it comes to housing costs?
It's overall more affordable than Madison, and it's still a little bit more expensive than the average rent across the state, at least based on the HUD fair market rents, which are pegged at the 40th percentile of rents, so that they're below the 60% of the rents in a given area. They're ostensibly more affordable than most apartments. But yeah, Milwaukee is definitely more affordable than Madison, but still there are areas in Milwaukee that are not super easy to find affordable housing as well.
Talking to Will Cushman, associate editor of WisContext, looking at his latest reporting on refugees being resettled here in Wisconsin and difficulty finding housing for them. One agency stop is going to not work in Madison anymore because of high housing costs, limited availability. And Will, on top of all this, okay, availability of rental apartments, cost, you mentioned accessibility for transportation. Also, I imagine that for a refugee, they have certain unique needs that these agencies are looking at because there are people who are coming here maybe don't have English language skills and things like that. What other factors are they looking at when they look
for a place for a refugee.
Right. You're correct. A lot of them don't have English language skills. So they're looking to hook them up with organizations that provide those. You're locally in Madison. One of those organizations is the Literacy Network. So a lot of refugees are resettled in an area where they can easily access those services, at least as easily as possible. And they're also looking at these resettlement agencies do not want to resettle refugees in areas that are prone to crime. They are coming almost always from regions where they are leaving strife and conflict and are like often traumatized, and they don't want to re-traumatize them by placing them in a neighborhood that's not safe in Madison.
Let's take a little wider look at the refugee issue. It's something we've talked about. You've been covering on WisContext. We've talked about on Central Time. Last time you're on with us, the story is we're getting fewer refugees coming to Wisconsin recently. Is that right?
Correct.
What kind of numbers are we seeing now?
Ooh,
I know you don't have that in front of you, but roughly.
Yeah, roughly. It's gone down a lot over the last couple of years. Basically, since 2017, the federal government has capped the number of refugees that it will resettle across the nation at a much lower number than it had previously. And so that's affecting every region of the nation.
And I've heard it might seem like, okay, well, that makes it easier for resettlement groups because they're dealing with fewer people. I've talked to people with resettlement agencies who say, you know, kind of having that unpredictable up and down makes it hard for them to have the right number of staff, to know what they're planning for. So it doesn't necessarily solve this problem we're talking about of finding housing.
Right. Yeah, that is true. And I can tell you that one resettlement agency up in the Fox Cities region did planned ahead once they heard the announcement in early 2017 of the much lower cap for refugees nationwide. And they did plan ahead and reduce their staff then. And so, yeah, there is less capacity across the board, I would say, probably.
Now, getting back to this housing issue, I mean, does it ultimately make it difficult? Does it make it harder to even bring in the lower number of refugees that we're bringing in now?
I would imagine so. I mean, given that Lutheran Social Services, they weren't resettling a ton of refugees in Madison, but they were finding it difficult to resettle even like fewer than a dozen. It's still having an effect even with the lower number of refugees coming to the state.
And this is part of a broader series you guys have done on WisContext on refugees in Wisconsin. Can you just talk about the wider series a little bit and what kind of things you found out?
Sure. Yeah. We look at the changing number of in recent years, the lower numbers of refugees coming to the state. We've also just looked at how the resettlement process works. It's a fairly complicated process and involves local organizations, the U.S. State Department, international organizations. And we just published a story yesterday, I believe, that is an excerpt from a memoir that deals in part with the story of a Tibetan refugee in Madison in the 1990s and her struggle to create a new life here.
And what are you looking at next when it comes to this affordable housing issue? Are there efforts in Madison when it comes to the housing side of the story you just did that might, I don't know, in another 5 or 10 years, bring availability back up?
Sure. Yeah, we will definitely continue to follow affordable housing in Madison and statewide. I think we're going to follow for sure. The city of Madison has committed a large sum of money to building affordable housing units. They've built the money that they have funded has built, I think, to this point, or some apartments are still in progress, the building, but around 1,000 units. And I think there's a goal for more. We'll take a look to, we're going to follow the Madison mayoral race. There's some differing opinions on how to approach affordable housing from the two candidates, whether or not it includes the tiny houses, which has been proposed, or whether the housing first strategy that Madison is using right now might be successful
for
or
homelessness.
Be expanded. Yes, for homelessness. Yeah, and yeah, it's tangentially related, but we'll be following all of those stories.
All right, Will, thanks a lot for bringing us up to date.
Thank you.
That was Will Cushman, associate editor of WisContext. He was with us to talk about his recent piece, High Rents Are Making Madison a Harder Place for Refugees to Find a Home. You can find that online at wiscontext.org.